there's the same weirdness for straight people of, you know, why people are attracted to the same sex rather than another sex. Is it that they have, why do you think, Peter, that even many good liberals who support gay rights are still kind of freaked out by...
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! So I was thumbing through my copy of Variety today, and I couldn't help noticing the lead article. Media executives breathe huge sigh of relief. Clinton versus Obama renewed for an extra 13 weeks. Political reality television continues in America. Okay, I'm kidding. That wasn't really there, but... would you expect them to put it there? But you know that's what it was, right? Because this spectacle, this carnival sideshow, is solely for the purpose of keeping the so-called professional media from having to actually do journalism and pay attention to stuff. By way of proving that, I've got some real, live, honest-to-God news stories tonight, most of which probably haven't gotten that much play today in the aftermath of She's Still Alive. What did Obama do wrong? Will Hillary engage the superdelegates to steal Obama's change? And all various and sundry other crapulastic pieces of garbage that will be hustled out there by the so-called professional media. So, like I said, so there are some there's some real news out there, and we're going to get into it. But it's also worth bearing in mind that this isn't just any old evening here on Head On. It's the middle of the week. We're downhill toward Friday. Hallelujah! It's prayer meeting. Come on down to the altar. Get your magic cracker. Place your hands upon the subwoofer, brethren and sistren, and feel the healing waves of common sense a-flowing through you. Glory!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen.
Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. It's not the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, put your hands together, brethren and sistren. Yes, indeedy. That's our new Wednesday night prayer meeting theme song from the Australian comedy program, The Chaser. Or Chaser, I'm not sure which. John will straighten me up. But I do know it's not plural. It's not Chasers. It's Chaser. It's prayer meeting night here on Head On, and let's jump out there with a couple of funsies real quick. Fundy funsies. Ooh, I think we've invented something else. If you are a listener, and I'm sort of doing this because Peter Godbold, oh mercy, doggone it, he's so frustrated he could eat nails and spit rivets. He is still he's still in the dark, so to speak. His high speed internet connection isn't an internet connection at all for going on what, the third day now, maybe the fourth, and he's in a high state of frustration, I got to tell you. But I want to share some stories with you. I've passed this along to him as well because in the hopes that maybe he'll take a run at it as well later in one of his programs. But if you are a regular listener to Strictly Confidential, which I frankly think straight people should be, then you may have been listening when he had some folks on from Gleason, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Now, Gleason puts together, there are little chapters at little high schools all over the place, colleges too. And their main thrust of what they do is to try to prevent children from being kicked, tormented, tortured, verbally abused, beaten, whipped, stomped on the playground, under the general rubric of smear the queer. And so they are an anti-bullying organization. Well, that's not good enough for the American Family Association. Because Gleason has started something that they call the Day of Silence. And on the Day of Silence, children are encouraged, if they wish to do so, to remain silent all day long in order to stand in solidarity with those who must remain silent for fear of being killed or beaten or otherwise maimed by people like fundamentalist so-called Christians who believe that their book says that, people who don't have sex the right way don't deserve to live. Or people that, and see, that's the thing, they don't even have to be gay. They can just be perceived to be gay. Or gay can be the convenient excuse for stomping the life out of somebody. And so this Day of Silence, it's a solidarity thing. It happens on Friday, April the 25th this year. And thousands of school children in high schools will be observing the Day of Silence, remaining silent to stand with those who are compelled to be silent by a sexist, homophobic culture. Now, that doesn't mean that the silent children aren't learning. And it is a day of silence. That should make teaching easier. It should make the conveying of knowledge and information easier than it ordinarily would be. Yeah, I don't know. If I was a teacher at one of these high schools, I'd be beating the drum for the day of silence just because I think I might get some information across for a change instead of the constant note passing and the gum chomping and the and did you see her? Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. And the texting and the phoning and the ugh. But no, not for the American Family Association. They don't want their children learning on the Day of Silence, the fundies, these freaks. The American Family Association, led by its hegemoniacal leader, the Reverend Donald Wildman. He's a wild man. Is telling its mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, snake-handling, strychnine-swigging, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling faithful to keep their children home on April the 25th so that they will not have to confront or be confronted by the idea that gay people are also human. Take action, says the notice that I've received. What should parents do? Check with your local school principal to see if your child's school will be participating in DOS. Damn, I thought that was an operating system. No, Day of Silence. Oh, I get it. See if they'll be participating in DOS. If the school's participating, notify other parents about DOS and ask them to join in keeping their hateful children out of school. Oh, I'm sorry, it doesn't say hateful. Keeping their freakish children. Oh, it doesn't say freakish. Keeping their evil little spawn. I'm sorry, it doesn't say evil little spawn. In keeping their children out of school on that day. Some tips. Be sure of the date that DOS is planned for your school. Inform the school of your intention to keep your child home, keep your rotten little spawn home on that day, and explain why. Explain to your children why you're taking a stand. Homosexual behavior is not an innate identity. It is a sinful, unnatural, and destructive behavior. No school should advance a physically, emotionally, and spiritually destructive lifestyle to students. God. Religion Nazis, that's what these people are. Never occurred to Donald Wildman that the single most destructive part of homosexuality is the damn closet. But then again, for all we know, Donald Wildman's in it too, so, you know. I mean, he is, after all, a fundamentalist minister, so. You know, Larry Craig, Ted Haggard, the dude in Bristol, Tennessee with the stunning frock and the fishnets loaded up on vodka and painkillers and peeing on the side of a car wash while the children watched. You know, those guys. Let's see. How about some frequently asked questions? Here's some frequently asked questions about the Day of Silence. Why should parents be concerned about the so-called Day of Silence? Answer. This event was started a decade ago by an adult homosexual advocacy group, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, with the goal of promoting homosexuality to all students in a given school. It has grown enormously. Isn't it funny how they can't talk about gay people without then using the word enormous? Unfortunately, as the support for the gay agenda has been embraced by thousands of schools and impressionable students nationwide, millions of toasters have already been given away. The Day of Silence postures every person who identifies as a homosexual, bisexual, or cross-dresser as a victim of ongoing, unrelenting harassment and discrimination being silenced. Well, doesn't the existence of this email sort of prove the point? While some incidents like this do occur, this event is an overwhelming exaggeration in an effort to manipulate our kids' natural sympathies. The result, ironically, is that youth develop favorable views about a controversial, high-risk behavior. Yeah, it's a high-risk behavior. On the other hand, little Johnny and little Susie going out on a Friday night and doing the pelvic thrust together in the back seat of the old Ford on a, you know, dark, muddy mountain road, half liquored up out of their mind on the cheap beer that the dirty old man outside the convenience store bought them. That's not high-risk behavior. On the other hand, if a young man wants to sit around and listen to show tunes in the quiet of his bedroom all by himself, high risk, high risk, high risk. This year, Gleason adds a special twist to Day of Silence, shameless exploitation of the recent tragic school death of California 8th grade student Lawrence King. Los Angeles media report that although the boy had been entrusted to the care of Casa Pacifica, a residential center for abused, neglected, and severely emotionally disturbed children, he had been permitted for the last 2 weeks to attend school in feminine makeup, nail polish, and high-heeled boots. The adult guardian, school administrators, and teachers responsible for guiding and protecting this precious, troubled child failed him miserably. They should have sent him to school in a flannel shirt and overalls like God wanted him to wear. Gleason fails him again now by employing his violent death to manipulate and deceive millions of children. Of course, what these bigoted assholes at the American Family Association fail to note is that Lawrence King was beaten to death precisely because he was of what was perceived to be his objectionable lifestyle and gender identity. Here's another one of their questions. Isn't the Day of Silence just a way for students to learn compassion and tolerance? In reality, the Day of Silence is a one-sided campaign to manipulate acceptance of homosexuality by every student. Can you imagine? Now, wait. I can't tell you to do because you don't have it in front of you. I'd love to do a copy and paste over into a word processing program, and then do a global search of search and replace with searching out the word homosexual and changing it to African American. Let's try that. Let's just see. In reality, the Day of Silence is a one-sided campaign to manipulate acceptance of African Americans by every student. Nationwide, parents are fed up with the political hijacking of their kids' classrooms with no opposing views allowed. What makes it even more problematic is that the results of tolerating this lifestyle without objection can be tragic for many young people. The risks of African-American behavior are well understood by public health officials, but are being ignored by some politically correct school administrations. Seems to sort of make things abundantly clear for me. I won't presume to speak for you. But these people are monsters. These people are hate-filled, bigoted, dirt-ignorant, murderous, theocratic thugs. And yet they operate tax-free. They take in millions of dollars. They run a humongous syndicated radio network. They produce online video. They have a huge payroll and staff. Not a penny of it coming in is taxed to the organization. And all of that tax-free money is used for purposes of promoting the hatred of people for how they get it on. And they've been so successful at it that now they're expanding their hate-filled activities to children. Actively moving to make sure that their fundy children grow up as hate-filled, benighted, and ignorant as they themselves are. Now, shameless self-promotion moment. Tell me one other radio network that's talking about this. Oh, maybe in passing, maybe because it's cute, maybe because it's funny to joke about the fundies, and I do the funny little voices, and I try to make it, it's a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, and I admit it. But I imagine that most of talk radio today was eaten alive by Hillary's not dead yet. What? She said she's not dead yet. Well, she will be very soon. She's very ill. She can't win Pennsylvania. I imagine it was wall to wall, that crap. And frankly, if you've already voted in your primary, you're done. If you voted yesterday in your primary, you're done. You participated in the electoral process. Some of us still have primaries coming up, and we don't know if our vote will matter or not. And yet we spend hours upon hours, what little liberal talk radio there is out there spends hours upon hours upon hours upon hours debating something that is fairly meaningless. Because, all the hatred that spews from so-called liberal websites against Hillary Clinton, and the hatred that gets spewed toward Barack Obama, is one of the most misguided bunches of garbage that I've recently seen. Memo to Democrats. The enemy is John McCain. And I do mean enemy. Mark Levin is calling him John McSame. And I kind of got a chuckle out of that because it's true. Here's the new boss, same as the old boss. Me, I call him the McCain-Churian candidate. Because we don't know exactly what 5 years of torture and mental manipulation did to that man's psyche. We don't know how he'll respond at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was an ad that should have been saved for insane McCain. Because I've got a pretty good idea that Barack Obama picks up the phone or Hillary Clinton picks up the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. The first thing out of their mouth isn't, screw them, nuke them. I don't know about that with McCain. So let me reiterate. The enemy is John McCain. And yet for all the time that was wasted talking about the primaries today. Again, because it's easy. See, it's easy. It's a lazy way to go about it. It's the top issue. Or it's the top story in the stack, and you just go to it, and people go, "Ooh, yeah, yeah." Meanwhile, there is a right-wing, neo-fascist, tax-free organization in the United States of America that is trying to teach a little bit more hate to young people who have enough problems as it is just by virtue of being adolescents. Those people who say, youth is wasted on the young. You know what? To get through something like high school, you gotta be young. You could not take the vast majority of the listening audience of this network and put them in 10th grade biology class and do anything short of see them run screaming from the room. because it's hard to be an adolescent. And it gets a little harder every year. Every generation, it gets a little bit tougher. Oh, sure, there may be more gizmos, more stuff to divert attention, but that doesn't change what it's like to be in 10th grade and have the big football captain look over at you and go, "Faggot!" Or maybe get run up against the lockers and sucker punched a few times. And that, by God, is the America that we live in. That is the America that the American Family Association wants more of, baby! They like that. It appeals to them because they think Jesus hates the queers too. And that's who's telling them to do the hating. A guy who said, "Come with me and I will make you fishers of men." A guy who the church itself says never had sex. A guy who spent all of his time with 12 dudes. And the right-wing religion industry thinks that he hated gay people. Seems to me the vast majority of his message was about not hating. It kind of got him dead. So, yeah, I'm going to spend some time on things like that. If you want to recap last night's results, you know, call in. I'll sit here and, you know, we'll talk about it. But Jesus, it's over. Now, I realize, you know, back when my beloved Mountaineers beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, for the next couple of days, I was walking around, and West Virginia fans were walking around going, "Man, did you see Owen Schmidt go barreling down?" And the guy from the sportscaster said, "It's like a runaway beer truck. Wasn't that beautiful?" And I, yeah, with sports, I understand that. I don't get it so much in politics. Politics is all, ask anybody who's ever been in it. Politics is about what happens next. It's not about what happens yesterday, because what happened yesterday is not going to get you where you need to be. On the other hand, it is 1 month and 20 days until the American Family Association wants children pulled out of school because some children are refusing to speak. Nobody's being asked to wear a T-shirt. It's not like the stupid pro-lifers who put, you know, the tape on their faces, or the ignorant right-wing repiglickens who go to convention sessions with little Purple Heart Band-Aids on their face. This is merely silence. So when people who object to other people getting killed and stomped and maimed and tortured, when they speak up about it, the American Family Association and the Focus on the Family are all there to say they need to shut up. Well, okay, they've shut up. Now they're going to be silent. Can't do that either. Get back in the damn closet where we can't see you anymore. You tell me which is the greater issue. You tell me which has more impact. Yesterday's political results, or what's coming down the pike from the hateful religion industry? They've published a list of the schools where this is going to take place. They're setting up the harassment. How many little homophobic, fundy, evil spawn do you think are out there who would be willing to walk up to a child who has decided to remain silent on that day and just stomp their foot to make them scream, "Ha ha, made you make a noise, you're not silent anymore, fag!" Do you see what I mean? You know what I'm getting? I mean, I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan.
I want to give you my take on this, but from the straight point of view.
Well, that's pretty much what's been going on so far, but yeah, okay, cool.
Okay, well, mine's a little bit different.
Okay. Mine's the straight male point of view. Yours is the straight female point of view.
Mm-hmm. Who was also shoved up against a locker by one of the football team. Not because I'm gay. I'm not. But you see, I had the misfortune to be one of those girls in high school who had very large breasts.
Okay.
And they thought it was fun to shove me up against the wall and to feel me up and humiliate me. Now, if this group, by these actions, by protecting the even more vulnerable people than I was, can help stop that kind of thing, hey, I'm all for it. And dear old Focus on the Family, shove it up your ass.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like we were talking about last night. I'm tired of being nice about this stuff.
I eventually took care of my problem. I made a little visit to a plastic surgeon. But there were girls who didn't have the insurance I had at one time. And to this day, they despise themselves because of the way they're built, because of those experiences they had in high school.
I can't conceive of it. But I mean, like I said, it's not an easy time for anybody.
No.
It's not an easy time for the straight kids. Why should it be made a worse time for the gay kids? Or the kids,
and again,
let me reiterate, the kids that are perceived to be. I mean, it's not like there's a membership card that goes out or anything.
Yeah, you know, one of the people that I imagine whose high school years was an absolute hell was Dennis Kucinich, because he's short. I mean, let's face it, he resembles an elf. And he's the classic stereotype of the gay kid. Never mind the fact that he's not. And by the way, he won his primary election.
Yes, he did. But you know, you raise the stereotype, you know.
The stereotype.
It's a question. It's a question of ignorance and perceptions. And if kids can't be silent, and if they can't speak out,
what are they supposed to do?
Right.
Telling people? And I got to tell you, the more I hear about this idiot, especially every time he goes after the gays, I keep thinking, he sounds more and more like that idiot on the German staff in the 1930s as he sent the homosexuals off to the gas chambers.
Well, you know, they're religio-fascists is what they are. You know, the right wing is fond of that term, Islamo-fascist. Well, you know, what's the difference? These people are Christo-fascists, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Takes one to know one, you know what I mean? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I know.
May I mention one small piece of primary news that...
Sure, and I didn't say people couldn't. I'm just trying to get a sense of perspective here, Susan.
This just tickled me to death.
All right.
The town of Brattleboro, Vermont.
Yes, they...
passed their law.
They passed their resolution calling for the, not the impeachment, but the arrest and conviction of...
Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. Yay!
Kind of makes you want to move to Brattleboro, doesn't it?
Oh, you know what...
I have a real hard time saying it. Brattleboro. It is Brattleboro, isn't it?
Brattleboro, sorry.
Well, no. I mean, yeah. I just know it sounds like a great place to live. I'm proud of them.
And I sincerely hope that after the creepazoids in office are out of office, they make the mistake and forget and walk into that town, and they actually do busking.
Oh, then there'd be a constitutional crisis, and America can't handle one of those. Hey, Susan, thanks
no,
a lot,
no, no.
dear.
Yeah, okay.
Got to roll along.
Remember, after office.
After office. That's true.
Okay.
But, yeah, after office. Very good. Yes. All right. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And rolling onward. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, it's Vince.
Hey, Vince, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How have you been, sir?
Oh, I'm pretty good, and drop the sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all just family here.
Yeah, I had to call in, man. I haven't called in a couple of months, I don't think. But, I mean, the topic that you've been on today kind of hits kind of close to home for me. When I was growing up, I lived in down. Are you familiar with the Ponte Vedra Beach area in Florida?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to live in that area. My parents didn't make Ponte Vedra money, but we had friends who had set us up down there who did make Ponte Vedra money at the time. And my dad, right after we got chased out of Michigan, my dad was sort of working in the aviation industry. I had a really hard time in the school system up there. First of all, just, you know how people kind of get in their little cliches and whatnot. And, of course, I fit my own little niche of my own, being the poor kid, relatively speaking. And the whole gay thing kind of got started fairly quickly with me. And, I mean, it even got to the point, I was an odd kid. And it got to the point where even the teachers were kind of like going to my parents and going, you know, we have some concerns about the way he's developing, and it took a lot for him to finally come out and say it, but I even had the freaking teachers running around going, you know, we think he's gay, and I wasn't, and I'm not, but Jesus Christ, the damage it did.
Yeah, I got some of that I share with you, and you said, you know, I was an odd kid. Odd is an oddly defined thing in the adolescent years, Vince. For all their attempts at testing the boundaries and all of the stuff that the psychologists like to talk about, adolescents are very clannish and army antish. And anybody who does not fit the definition of the norm is odd. I was a book reader. I was in the theater department. I was a terrible football player. And got, you know, it got called every name in the book. And that mainly because I didn't fit. But there are more people probably that don't fit than do.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, when I say I was odd, I don't mean like I was odd and like you had your, you know, I mean, you're right. Everybody to a certain degree is odd. But I was odd in the sense that after the first couple of times I had gotten into altercations with kids and whatnot, I got so paranoid that even when people did come up and try, I don't know if you can hear that, my cat's going up with ballistic in the background here, but I had gotten so paranoid after the first couple go-arounds that even when people came up and tried to be nice to me, I just automatically assumed that they weren't. It just got to be a survival mechanism for me, because I got burned a couple of times. People would come up and start being nice to me, and the next thing you know, I'm showed up against a locker getting sucker punched 6 or 20 times, you know, just like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And so I just very quickly got to a I don't trust anybody mentality, and I didn't get out of that. I got into that mode probably when I was in third grade, and I didn't get out of that mode where I could start being friends with anybody. I had no friends from the time I was in pretty much third grade, probably up until about the time that I hit about the early years of high school. And the only reason that happened was because we moved. And even when we moved, I got into when we moved up to where I am now. It was funny. I had injured myself because I took up rollerblading just, you know, for fun of it, and I hurt my knee rollerblading. And when I came to this new school system, I was on crutches, and we came right at the beginning of the eighth grade year. And it also got to a point, I don't know if this is still the fad, but being called gay kind of was the throw around generic slur for just about anybody you didn't like about the time I was in high school. You know, if you didn't like somebody, you automatically called them gay. And of course, I'd already been through I didn't understand it at the time, and I'd been through this. I'd already been through this hell at the other school system, and I decided very early on that when I moved here, I was not going to let anybody call me gay again. And I had this kid come up and call me gay and kick my crutch out from under me. I turned around, I whipped the living daylights out of him. The school wouldn't let me come back until I was off my crutches because they considered them deadly weapons.
Jesus.
But nobody called me gay no more.
And sometimes that's... look, you know, it's a self-help sort of situation. But, you know...
Well, I hate to say it like this because, you know... Sometimes it's just what you got to do. I mean, especially when you're growing up. You ain't kidding when you're saying that, you know, people... I know I couldn't go back and do it again. I sometimes sit there and go, oh, I'd like to go back and do high school again. But I'd like to do high school again, like I'd like to be able to make better grades and whatnot. All the, you know, social, political, you know, bullcrap, adolescent bullcrap that goes on in there. Oh, my God, I couldn't do that twice.
No.
I barely got through it the first time.
I always think of that film, The Breakfast Club, and the conclusions they come to at the end of it. You can tell that film was written by somebody who had a lot of teenage angst, as it's called. And that, you know, that phrase even sells it short, because it's not just angst; it is legitimate, bone-chilling, gut-rumbling fear. Fear of being perceived as outside the beyond the pale. Fear of being physically harmed. Fear. And, you know, I'll go ahead and confess I still have nightmares from time to time, and they go all the way back to that age. And I'm not, and suddenly I haven't graduated from high school. I haven't been to college. I haven't graduated. I haven't had a job. And I'm just right smack dab back in the middle of it all, just going, ooh, you know. Okay, I realize I probably need professional help, but, you know.
No more than the rest of us.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, except to, and this is not about me tooting my trumpet or saying that we're better than anybody else, but time has got to be spent on this stuff, Vince. And it, you know, we talk about building community. We talk about creating dialogue and discussion. That has got to happen so that people can realize that just because the American Family Association has umpty bajillion million dollars and has radio networks and can spew this filth and hate, that there is a way to fight back against it.
That is true to a certain degree, but a part of me kind of thinks that, you know, what this is representative of is a deeper, maybe more primal, and God don't, nobody, even though I'm talking about this sort of thing, I am in no way a psychiatrist or any way like that, so please don't construe anything I'm saying that way. But, you know, before it was being a communist, before it was, you know, you pick anything throughout the course of all the decades, you know, gay, I think, is just the face of something that has been going on pretty much since humanity has been in existence. And even if we get to a point as a society, culturally, where being gay isn't such, doesn't have that kind of negative connotation to it, it's just going to switch to something else. It's just going to be called whatever the bad thing of that era is.
And that's because the religion industry can't... Because they're so heavily invested in their own financial well-being, Vince, they can't talk about the real message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Galilean carpenter. Okay, they can't talk about that. They can't talk about. That's a message of love and tolerance, and they can't deal with that. They've got to have somebody to hate.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I mean, I don't think that the you know, the religion machine, as you put it, is necessarily responsible for this, but they sure as hell are exploiting it as best they can.
No, well, if you want to talk about responsibility, Vince, you have to talk about innate human fears. And because we're humans and because we are not that far removed from our forebears who came down out of the trees, we have a profound fear of the unknown and the unknowable. We don't have night vision, so we fear the dark.
There you go.
We don't, and so fear, and you know, and the great book Dune, you know, there's that line in there, fear is the mind killer. And as a consequence of it, we kill ourselves with our fears. These kids in school aren't, you know, they're not going to school on April 25th singing show tunes. They are remaining silent. And even the silence is terrifying to the ignorant, and ignorance is the cause.
Because of the statement, and they don't want them making a statement, however they intend to make it. And the sad thing is that kids who do participate in this are going to be targeted as a result of it. And because of that, I kind of don't agree with it, because God knows these kids are already, you know, the type of kids who are going to participate in this sort of thing, you know, are kind of the same kind of kids who are already targets to the type of people who will be targeting them. I know that's very roundabout, but I'm pretty sure.
No, I get what you're saying. They're drawing the target more broadly on their backs, I think, if I understand you correctly.
Yeah, they might have a bullseye on their back saying, you know, hey, you know, the big giant kick me sign.
But they're not wearing a T-shirt saying, I'm being silent. They're just being silent.
It doesn't matter. It's a statement. I mean...
I know, but I mean, what are you going to do? Accuse them of... I don't mean you, but I mean, what's a person going to do? Accuse them of being silent? That's the beauty of the program. And, of course, you like to think in some enlightened places that, I don't know, you ever see that movie In and Out, Kevin Kline, and what's his name? Magnum P.I. guy. At the end of the film, all of this guy's students are standing up saying, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay. You know, straight people, gay people, whatever, everybody's saying, just in solidarity with this guy. And you know what, if I'm a teacher or I'm a school administrator, I'm going to be grateful for something like this happening, because it means perhaps that there is going to be a lessening of the overall violence in my individual school. Because it means that there is it's a nonviolent way of standing up to bullies. What you did with your crutches, they're doing with their silence. I mean, does that make any sense?
Silence is not as effective, because then the bully just turns around and is, you know, like you said, stamps on someone's foot. Ha ha, made you make a noise. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a part of me likes to believe that eventually we'll mature to a point where that sort of thing won't be necessary. Another part of me says, you know, the only way you can deal with bullies is to turn around and just bloody their nose a little bit, because at the heart of any bully is just a coward. And that coward is only strong so long as they perceive you to be weaker. And if you stand up to them, by whatever means is necessary, for some people, for some bullies, you can just get up and be like, you know, hey, you know, leave me alone. And they'll be like, oh, okay, and, you know, and they'll leave you alone. But some of them, you just got to punch right in the nose.
And I'm the first one to agree with you. I use that analogy constantly in terms of Democrats and politics. I've got a story in the stack tonight. It looks like the House of Representatives is getting ready to cave in to the Bush administration again, because they don't have the nerve. Nancy Pelosi does not have the nerve to see a bully for who he is and stand up to him, bloody his nose, and say, now, try again. And that's the story of Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Congress. No guts.
Folks in front of the computer should... hang on, let me turn the speakers off. Folks in front of the computer should really go get on Google and look for a flash animation called Spinocrat.
Oh, God, don't you love that?
It's hilarious. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's all too accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. As you say, unfortunately. But I doubt if anything like this will be done around here. In terms of the day of silence, because the kids probably would get their guts stomped out. Oddly enough, my son, for his social studies project, his project is bullying.
And this is
a classic example of it. I'm gonna tell him about it, so that if he wants to, he can at least use some of the stuff as an example. Lawrence, you know, the Lawrence King story, the kid was, you know, he wasn't just murdered, Vince. He was bullied to death. In the truest sense of the word. So, there's got to be, short, yeah, I agree with punching the bully in the nose. But you can't just have a group of people go and start, you know, cruising the halls for people to punch. I really do.
Sounds like they just turn into bullies themselves.
Right. And the whole idea is to break the cycle of violence.
Well, you know, I really think that what it boils down to is basically just, you know, you're right. You can't have a group of police roaming the halls looking for people to punch, because then you just end up no better than they are. But at a certain level, the individual or the group of people dealing with the individual or the group of people has to stand up and say, look, I'm not going to take this anymore, and by any means necessary.
Yeah.
You know? And if that means, you know, look, pal, leave me alone. You know, you're not gonna make me feel bad about myself. You're not gonna continue to bully me. You're not gonna kick my crutches out from under me. And if they don't listen and they keep it up, well then by God, if what it takes is to turn around and slap them silly, you know, and knock their nose off, and to if that's what it takes to get them through their heads, you know, some people just don't learn otherwise. Sad state of affairs, but I think that's just one of the things about, you know, human nature that you're just going to have to deal with.
Yeah. Well,
and that way, since the beginning of time, and as much as we would like to hope, you know, otherwise, it's probably going to be that way to a certain extent until the human race dies out.
And that may be part and parcel of why eventually the human race does die out, because we can't learn from our past mistakes, Vince. You know, Kurt Vonnegut came to that conclusion. And it's a grim one indeed, don't you think?
In response to the to cobwebs in the chat room, I just have to say, I had one of those guys come up to me at work the other day.
Oh.
Who, you know, the Jesus preachers.
Yeah.
He's like, have you found Jesus? I looked at him and I said, you people have lost him again? He just kind of looked at me kind of funny and turned around and walked off, didn't quite know how to respond to that.
Why can't you keep a handle on him? Lord. Hey, Vince.
Anyways, I'm sure there's probably some other folks going on, or you got our tablets to get to, so let me go ahead and get off the line.
All right,
here.
Vince, I appreciate your time, and you know, don't be such a stranger, okay?
I try not to be. I'm always listening, man. I just try not to call in unless I've got something to say.
All right, sounds good.
Truly smart people never miss an opportunity to keep their mouth closed.
I know, but oh boy, what does that say about me?
No, it's knowing when to open it, and you know when to open it. There are some, you know, it's like the right wingers don't know when to not open it and when to open it, and that's part of the difference, I like to think.
Thanks for bailing me out there.
Take it easy,
Vince.
Do it. All right, see you later, Bob.
Bye now. And, you know, that's just a starting place. You want some more right-wing religion industry fun? Here's one more before we hit the top of the hour and maybe start doing real news. Headline, media silent on Obama's controversial interpretation of Scripture.
What? Huh?
Conservative media watchdog Bob Knight, I thought he was a basketball coach, says the national media virtually ignored. Does that mean they did it on a computer? Ooh, I got a million of them. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Virtually ignored Democratic presidential frontrunner Senator Barack Obama's recent use of the Sermon on the Mount to justify homosexual civil unions. He boldly declared in a campaign speech recently that states should legalize same-sex unions for homosexuals. If people find that controversial, then I would just refer them to the Sermon on the Mount, which I think is, in my mind, for my faith, more central than an obscure passage in Romans. Woo! I'd missed that! Hot diggity, Senator Obama. That's one right across the bow. An obscure passage in Romans? Wow. And, of course, for the scholars out there, the book of Romans is widely discussed in terms of what a complex piece it is. In the final analysis, the book of Romans is St. Paul's acid trip. And, yeah, the Sermon on the Mount, it's what I said earlier, the Sermon on the Mount is more important than an obscure passage in Romans. Bob Knight said, it's not an obscure passage. It's well known by millions of hateful people, I mean Christians. Number two, it's not the only word in the Bible about this topic. Ah, but there are no words from Jesus on the topic, Bobby Knight. I tell you, it's gonna get right ugly. And before we go to the before we break for the hour, let's see who's on the phone. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Not so much. I guess as a New York City public school teacher, I could tell you a thing on bullying.
Yeah, do please.
Well, me personally, I think it's just something inbred to the American culture, bullying. You know, after all, we bullied the Native Americans out of their land.
See, but I think I'm guessing, Kevin, it's a little bit more universal than just American.
I think it's in something, you know, I find it less in other countries where other countries are more communal in understanding. Other industrialized countries, even though they could be bullies too, because that's how you get to become industrialized. You know, it is human nature to a degree, but I think it's uniquely something innately American where you cannot almost, they don't comprehend anything but bullying.
And that's the only thing they respond to as well, right?
Exactly. I think our whole system caters to bullying. That's why we have people like George W., the right-wing religious industry, the right-wing media, because that's all they respect to.
Well, I mean, do you see the so-called teenage angst every day and in what you go through there in the school system?
Oh, yeah. Even though I think, believe it or not, New York is a bit better, but it's still there. You know, one interesting fact is, and, you know, I was discussing this with a colleague where, particularly in the African-American community, the kids with extreme, highly self-esteem don't regard scholarship in any merit. So while in most communities it's kids with low self-esteem that tend to fail in school, in African-American communities it's the opposite, where the kid with the lower self-esteem actually succeeds.
So that overbearing ego is a preventative toward scholarship?
To a certain degree, within the African American community, and it's a strange phenomenon because.
Well, again, but wait! Listen, you just made me think about something, Kevin. What about the guy who's the captain of the football team who squeaks by on his 2.1 average so he can remain eligible? Has tremendous self-esteem, whether he's black or white, and, you know, outside, you know, I'm talking about what I grew up with.
Those are very rare kind of individuals, I think. I'm talking very general numbers. There are always going to be exceptions.
Sure.
Yeah. There are people who, you know, one guy, we were talking about a kid who basically got socially promoted, and the kid can't even read a lick. It's because, you know, he sucked up to the teachers.
Yeah, jeez.
You know, and it's almost like there's no sense of paying the piper, you know. And I think, and again, it's an American thing where, you know, where the bully never gets the bloody nose.
So has it changed much since maybe you were a teenager, or God knows since I was? How does the cliquishness manifest itself these days, Kevin?
Well, I really haven't picked up on that because, you know, as a teacher, it's just so much us against them. It probably exists out there still. But as a teacher, you know, you tend not to notice, at least me personally, I tend not to notice the cliques too much.
But, I mean, is it the girls who have to have, you know, who dress to the nines, or the guys who have to have the latest pair of this or that shoes? Do you see that stuff?
Universal. That's universal.
Yeah, well, I was... I was reminded of that because you, I remember you mentioning in a previous phone call a while back, the girls who didn't want to do the little planting project at the Arboretum or the botanical park because they'd just gotten their nails done.
Yeah, yeah. And that's always been, and it's always been a problem with inner city schools where, you know, fashion takes precedence over learning or instruction or behavior or anything. The first thing they're going to notice when you come in as a teacher is what you're wearing.
Do they respond better to one kind of attire than another?
No. No, it's just universal. They're going to find something about you, you know.
Yeah, probing your weaknesses.
Yeah, they're looking for weakness. And, you know, they're looking for weakness. If you're not wearing the right kind of jeans or whatever, and, you know, adults, we tend to overlook that, but kids, they will, it means all the world to them. You know, their world is still that simple.
Yeah. And that narrowly defined, sure.
Yeah. The other day, I made the mistake of wearing, you know, carrying a blue handkerchief. You know, because sometimes, you know, being that it's winter and I'm wearing all these layers and I'm going to school, which is overheated, and I'm moving around, I'll break out of a sweat, I took out my blue bandana, they thought I was equipped.
Oh, you know, you said that, and that's, oh, gang sign. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like, and believe you me, that is so not part of my universe.
Well, I guess you've got to move to the tie-dyed bandanas, Kevin.
Yeah, I got to wear, just carry a regular white kerchief, you know, like a business kerchief. I don't think that any gangs are using that.
No, then you're in the service of the man. Yeah, it's white. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really, it's a can't win for all the confounded losing kind of proposition, isn't it?
It's not, and the sad thing is, you know, you try to break. Also, you know, I kind of blame the school administrations to a certain degree because if you have weak administrations and weak districts, this behavior is going to be tolerated. You know, if you have administration that's weak, it's going to be tolerated. If you have a strong administration, it will not be. And the parents tend to go to the floor because parents, regardless of how much, tend to have larger barks and bites. Because at the end of the day, we're taking care of your kid and your responsibility for about a good 6 to 8 hours a day. If you don't, and you know, a lot of, I think districts and parents, I mean a lot of districts or administrations need to start calling these parents bluff when they get out of control and just say, look, you're more than welcome to send your kid someplace else.
Yeah. No,
you know, and that's why it all ultimately goes down to parental supervision. You know, it's like this inalienable right to use the cell phone. In class.
In class?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so I mean, you're trying to teach a class and the kids are back there text messaging each other?
Yeah, and using cell phones. And, you know, you confiscate it and it's like, you know, a few weeks ago, this kid got sent to juvenile hall because he assaulted a teacher who confiscated his cell phone. You know, this is hardcore inner city schools now.
Wow, act at your own peril.
Yeah. But he got sent to juvenile hall. He's on what you call superintendent suspension.
Wow.
So,
over a cell phone.
Yeah, and you see, a lot, to me, I just boil down to, and going back to the original point, bullying is a lot of showmanship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, it's a lot of playing up to the crowd and showmanship. Once you isolate a bully on their own, forget it. Because I had an issue with a student about 2 weeks ago, and he came up in my face in a very threatening manner and all that. And, you know, we don't have school security. In New York, they have, you know, the police, the New York City Police Department, has its own division of school safety officers. and they're wearing regular cop uniforms, and they can arrest and use not deadly force, but physical force to restrain students. And then they'll call the regular police as backup if need be, if it comes down to that. Okay? And I had to call him to get him out of the class. And once I got him down to the dean's office, he just started crying like a little girl. And, you know, it might have been unprofessional of me, but I saw young him. Oh, you're no longer the tough guy anymore. So you're down here crying like a little, you know what?
Yeah.
And he's wearing all red, pretending he's a blood, and he's really not. But he had to play it up in front of the class.
Yeah, herd behavior.
Yeah. When you isolate a bully on his own, they're through. And that's the trigger. You're not even giving them the bloody nose. Because if you give them the bloody nose in front of the class, to a certain degree, that...
Well, yeah, that martyrs him.
Yeah. What you want to do is isolate him alone, him or her alone, and call them out for what they are.
I can't imagine it. That's just mind-boggling to me. And, you know, I know that, you know, from folks who listen to the program know that you've gone through a career change. This takes some guts, Kevin.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's trying and it's frustrating. To be honest with you, if things don't turn around in the next year for this country and all that, I am thinking about immigrating.
Well, I know that's been in the back of your mind for a while.
Yeah, either moving to the UK or Canada.
Now, by turnaround, do you mean like the Democrats take the White House? I mean, there are no overnight solutions, right?
I'm talking if the Democrats, there is no overnight, but I want to see at least a direction turning. And I don't care what Democrat gets in, as long as they get in. Because, like I said, Hillary, I may not be a big fan or supporter. I'm neither fan of Barack or Hillary. You know, I'm a John Edwards Kucinich kind of guy. But a Democrat has to get into it. And it's going to take at least four reasonable administrations to undo the damage that has been done in the past 8 years. Like Rome, we're going to need four or five good emperors.
Yeah. Well,
do the Julia Claudians have done.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Hey, Kevin, have yourself a great night, brother.
Okay, you too, bro.
All right. Bye. Don't forget, make sure you check back in. This is fascinating. This is like stand and deliver, only real.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Kevin calling from Brooklyn. On the front lines of teenage angst. So that's our first hour. I'm glad I didn't make Kevin wait through the break. You want to get involved in the discussion? You're more than welcome to. You want to bring another story to the table? You can do that too. That's what conversation radio is all about. The phone number? Well, you know the phone number too. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls into, I'm using a temporary one for the time being. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com until we get the regular production machine back into service. We'll be back after this musical interlude. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is the listener-supported head-on radio network, The Horn.
Changing ways, so-called liberated days. A story comes to mind of a friend of mine. Georgia boy was gay, I guess. Nothing more or nothing less. The kindest guy I ever knew. His mother's tears fell in vain. The afternoon jokes tried to explain that he needed love like all the rest. Paul says there must be a mistake. How can my son not be straight after all I've said and done for him? I are the ones he loves, a victim of these gay days, it seems. Georgie went to New York town, where he quickly settled down and soon became the toast of the great white way. Accepted by Manhattan's elite in all the places that were chic, no party was complete without George. Along the boulevards he cruised, and all the old queens blew a fuse. Everybody loved Georgie boy. Time I saw George alive was in the summer of 75. He said he was in love. I said, I'm pleased. George attended the opening night of another Broadway hype, but split before the final curtain fell. Deciding to take a shortcut home, arm in arm, they meant no wrong. A gentle breeze blew down Fifth Avenue. Dark inside street came a New Jersey gang with just one aim, to roll some innocent passerby. There ensued a fearful fight, screams rung out in the night. George's head hit a sidewalk cornerstone. A leather kid, a switchblade knife, did not intend to take his life. He just pushed his luck a little too far that night. Sight of blood dispersed again. A crowd gathered, the police came. An ambulance screamed to halt on 53rd and 3rd. George's life ended there, but I ask who really cares? George once said to me, and I quote, he said, never wait or hesitate. Get in, kid, before it's too late. You may never get another chance. 'Cause youth's a mask, but it don't last. Live it long and live it fast. Georgie was a friend of mine.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
14 minutes past the hour. Jump right in with your issue, your story. Don't be put off by me saying I'm taking a pledge on this or that issue. Because I've been rethinking that since saying it last night. We can't just live in a bubble. We can't ignore the world. But I guess what I'm arguing for is a sense of priority. A realization that as long as the water is pouring through the breach in the hull, there's not a lot of sense in rearranging deck chairs. And we have profound, profound breaches in the hull in this country. Oh, let's see. Let me say the headline from Market Watch. Housing is in its deepest, most rapid downswing since, wait for it, since the Great Depression. That, according to the chief economist for the National Association of Home Builders, yesterday. And here's the other part of that happy little piece of news. I'm being ironic here. Not only is the housing market in its deepest, most rapid downswing since the Great Depression, the same economist said that the downward momentum on housing prices is accelerating. Of course, that's what snowballs do as they go downhill. An avalanche begins with one little ice crystal going tink at the top of the mountain, and the next thing you know, it's 100 miles an hour at the base. But what a stunning number. The National Association of Home Builders, and you know, that's the industry group and the lobby for housing contractors, not the people who build them. The National Association of Home Builders says that new home sales will drop by 22% this year. And that will be down from the peak in late 2005. It will be down 55%. In other words, home sales will lose more than half of everything they gained. In 2008, housing starts for new homes are expected to go down by some 31%. That's 60% loss of the 3 year ago high. And that's just 2008. No relief in sight. I saw an article the other day referencing the Onion article that came out shortly before George Bush took office in 2001, January, where it parodied his first inaugural in which he declared, "Our long national nightmare of peace and prosperity is finally over." This is that. It is 5 years this month, brothers and sisters. 5 years this month that we have been trashing the American economy by waging this stupid, moronic, dirt, ignorant, blood-soaked, hateful little war of choice in Iraq. And you know what? You and me, well, you, I don't have one. You go a month without paying the credit card bill and see if the phone calls don't start coming. Well, let me put down here when you're going to make a payment. Did you get the payment out today? You're going to get the payment out tomorrow? Tell me when the payment's going to come in. We need to see a payment. We need to see two payments. Could you get two payments in? How about getting a month ahead? Could you send three payments in? We're getting a little nervous here! And yet the Congress, who should be in charge of making that phone call to the Bush administration about their credit card bill for this war, never mind who picks up the phone at 3 a.m., why won't Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid pick up the damn phone and make the collection call to the White House? What do we got to do? Housing is in a major contraction mode and will be another major heavy weight on the economy in the first quarter. There are 2 million vacant homes for sale in the United States right now. That's up 800,000 from just 3 years into Georgia's hateful, bloody little war of choice. And yeah, the two are related. That's a shame Mark Levine's not handy. He's the economist around here. He could explain how those things are tied together. How running up credit card debt with China to finance a war we didn't need to be in the first place comes around to bite you in the ass at home. He could explain that. I can't. I can just tell you that it does. And you can take my word for it, or you can go and find out for yourself. I mean, I'm not some sort of oracle. But that's okay. I'm sure there's other stuff that we can... don't look at that. We're experiencing a slowdown. It's a slowdown. You know, Jesus, when the tires come off the bus and the rims are grinding into the asphalt and you come to a shrieking stop and everybody in the bus goes into the front windshield, that's not a slowdown. That's a wreck. Housing starts are not likely to rebound until 2009. Housing alone took 1.25 percentage points off gross domestic product in the fourth quarter of 2007. Will continue to be a drag on GDP at least through the end of this year. Wow. Now, this is not to say that I'm one of those people who believes we should build a McMansion on every arable inch of former farmland in this country. We need some level of responsibility about what we do. But there's no doubt that housing starts have a great deal to do, or at least are a significant indicator of economic health in this country. But that's okay. It's just a slowdown. I mean, if it was anything other than just a slowdown, well, you know, doggone it, Dear Leader wouldn't have been out on the Rose Garden Yard with the McCain-Turian candidate today. Let's check in.
I don't think many people would have thought that John McCain would be here as a nominee of the Republican Party, except he knew he'd be here, and so did his wife, Cindy.
How about his girlfriend?
John showed,
did she know?
Incredible courage, strength of character, and perseverance in order to get to this moment. And that's exactly what we need in a president. Somebody who can handle the tough decisions. Somebody who won't flinch in the face of danger. We also need somebody with a big heart. I have got to know...
A big what? Oh, heart. Yeah, okay. Big heart. Yeah, he's got a big heart. Lots of love to share. Right? Right, George? Lots of love?
John well in the last 8 years. I've campaigned against him, and I've campaigned with him.
I've accused him of having a little black baby. Did that in South Carolina. Yeah, that was so funny. You should have seen all them racist pigs. They believed me.
Laura and I have spent time in their house. It's a man who deeply loves his family.
We made away with the silver.
It's a man who cares a lot about the less fortunate among us.
Now, okay, let me just check here. Let me get my reading glasses on. We're a minute into this press photo op, and the only thing that the McCain-Churian candidate has been allowed to do thus far is to giggle at dear leader's witticisms. Who's running for president here? It's all right, John. You just stand there, and I'll say nice things about you, and you giggle once in a while. That's your job. You just giggle. It's served me very well for about 8 years now.
He's a president, and he's going to be the president who will bring determination to defeat an enemy and a heart big enough to love those who hurt.
Calling Dr. Freud. Dr. Freud. Emergency Dr. Freud. Please pick up the courtesy phone. Courage enough to stand up to an enemy and a heart big enough to feel for those who hurt. So I'm supposed to, we're America, we're supposed to come away from this with what? That John McCain's going to continue to blow the snot out of Iraq, but he'll feel real bad if anybody shows him a picture of a little butchered Iraqi baby. Got it. That's what we need. More compassion.
And so I welcome you here. I wish you all the best. I'm glad to be your friend.
Well, I'm very honored. And
a minute and 15 seconds before he got to say he was honored. This is pitiful. This is just pathetic. But it's going to get funnier.
Humbled to have the opportunity to receive the endorsement of the President of the United States, a man who I have great admiration, respect, and affection. He and I, as is well known, had a very good competition in the year 2000.
That was good? John, you're saying that was good? You liked it when they accused you of miscegenation? You liked that? That was good competition? You are a lick spittle, aren't you, buddy? You're a real first-rate brown nose.
I was privileged and proud to have the opportunity to campaign for his election and re-election to the presidency of the United States. I appreciate his endorsement. I appreciate his service to our country. I intend,
for God's sakes, get a room, guys,
to have as much possible campaigning events and together as is in keeping with the president's heavy schedule.
And boy, I hope it's heavy. I hope it's really, really, really heavy. George, don't go out of the way. I mean, if I'm across the street campaigning, across the street from the White House, I know you got a really heavy schedule. Don't bother coming across the street, okay? You're political death! You're death to me! Hint, hint, hint.
And I look forward to that opportunity. I look forward.
It's the opportunity he looks forward to, not the actual moment. Those are going to be filled with cringing.
Or to the chance to bring our message to America.
Oh, it's not your message, it's George Bush's message now? You are John McSame, aren't you? Same crap, different day. Same crap, different president. Whew.
Last night, as you know, both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton called to congratulate me. I pledged at that time, and I pledge again, a respectful campaign.
Yeah. tell it to the Marines, John. A respectful campaign. If Barack Obama gets the Democratic nomination, how long will it be, John, before the ads with the jungle drums come out? If Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, how long will it be before the long knives come out for the castrating bitch? Oh, wait. They're already out, aren't they?
A respectful campaign based on the issues and based on the stark differences and vision that we have for the future of America. I hope that the president will find time from his busy schedule to be out on the campaign trail with me, and I will be very privileged to have the opportunity of being again on the campaign trail with him, only slightly different roles this time.
Slightly different roles this time.
Mother McCree. So, how many? Shall we start the office pool? How many campaign appearances will George Bush make on behalf of John McCain?
This is the White House calling. The president would like to know where John McCain will be next week. He'd like to appear with him at a campaign event.
Sorry, ma'am. We don't know where Senator McCain's going to be. Our last check, the last thing we had, he has a really big campaign event scheduled in Point Barrow, Alaska.
Did you say Point Barrow, Alaska?
Yeah, Point Barrow, Alaska. He's going to be there all next week. So if the president wants to the campaign for Senator McCain, he needs to be in Point Barrow, Alaska next week.
I'm telling the White House, you're going to be in Point Barrow, Alaska.
I can't wait. It's going to be glorious. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got? Hello? I've got background noise. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Welcome
Hello.
To the... Yeah, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Pardon? Okay, let's see what happened. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Well, here we are, Bob.
Yeah, here we are, and nothing's settled.
I told you the first time I called the show, well, it was in January, whenever things started,
mm-hmm.
that we would have the nightmare scenario, and we are now upon it.
Yeah, we are in the nightmare. And I don't think there's anybody to, like, put our hand in a warm bucket of water or slap us in the face or anything to get us out of it.
That's right. I said, the only way the Democrats could win was if both candidates run a positive campaign, stay on the issues, and whoever starts to win based on that, the other side should just concede and go ahead and help strengthen that candidate. When you go negative, it will never, ever stop. The other candidate, like I said, will be influenced to go negative, and everybody gets dragged into the mud until you destroy the entire party. This is the ultimate divide and conquer strategy. The Republicans feed little innuendos to the Clinton campaign, unbeknownst to the top people at the top. The little surrogates run around and throw stuff out. They do the same thing to the Obama campaign. His little circuits go out and run with the little talking points. And that's how the Republicans are doing this. And meanwhile, Karl Rove's back probably engineering all of this.
Gary, I don't know if it's Karl Rove or the heads of the media empires.
Well, whoever. Either way, there is a big pawn game going on. Do you think that the Canadian government leaking a memo on the you know what I mean? I mean, come on, Bob. I mean, people have to get smart with the media stuff.
The one little bit that I have heard suggests that the Canadian thing was brought about by the conservative Canadian leader who did it to not so well who did it not to help Hillary but to help McCain.
Well, either way, the point is you have a conservative government leaking out information on a candidate. Now they backtrack and said the whole thing was not true and everything. Is the media going to report that? Probably so. But it doesn't matter because all of this now. Ask yourself all these other questions about go a different direction than what the voters have kind of said, even if it's within the rules, you're going to lose the black vote, period. If you do something that looks unfair to Hillary, you're going to lose the women's vote. That was always my whole point. Once they start going after each other, each side is going to be so enthralled in their candidate that they're not family anymore. That's just how it is. And I don't, you know, to some degree I understand it, but I really don't understand why the Hillary haters who now jumped on the Obama bandwagon, you know, and it seems like Obama's taking a flak. Really, it's the people who just hate Hillary are just going off on the Hillary people, and the Hillary people are just going off on the Obama people, and now you just got this big grudge match going. I hate to say it, but it's kind of a fun thing to watch in a very abstract way.
Well, but, you watch it the same way you drive slow by a car wreck.
Exactly, that's what I mean. The dark recess of my heart probably enjoys some of this. But the reality of the fact is that we might as well get ready. This is my prediction. John McCain will be president of the United States. He will be able to pick conservative judges just to keep the conservatives happy, so they'll come out and appoint him in the next election in 2012 or whatever. And, you know, everything will be hunky-dory. But this depends on how bad the economy gets. What's going to happen is that they're going to make it so that the economy seems to be going just a little bit better right before the election, and then all hell breaks loose afterwards. You know, so I'm doing my little property prediction because I did it with the political situation. Democrats, that's what I kind of see happening at this point. Until somebody can show me that this thing is going to turn the other way, that's what's pretty much going to happen. I'm sorry.
For me, Gary, I've got to figure out the angle where Jeb Bush gets to be president in 2012. Because in the Bush family, that's what counts, and that's what's on the front burner.
Yeah, oh, I hadn't gotten to that one. I didn't want to go too cynical.
No, but I mean, do you disagree?
Oh, no. I that's on my list, too. I just didn't want to go too cynical yet. I didn't know if you guys could handle it.
Me? Not handle cynical?
I know you can. Oh, you could definitely handle it.
I have cynical on my Wheaties in the morning, Gary. I mean, come on. But really, you know, what with radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee dropping out after he didn't win Texas, I wondered, does that mean that some sort of a deal has now been struck? Is Huckabee the running mate?
Yeah, they do need that evangelical vote, but they really don't like him, so it's hard to say.
But McCain can't do without the fundamentalist religion industry vote. He cannot get there. If they stay home, he loses because the numbers simply aren't there for him. Unless the total meltdown that you're describing between the two Democratic candidates is so profound as to just make whichever camp is most disaffected stay home.
I mean, do you realize what they're getting ready to release on just people talking about this Obama stuff? This is nothing. Do people realize what they also want to release on the Clinton? This is just the beginning.
I'm enough of a realist to, and you know, you've probably heard me say it, there is a full-blown industry.
Of course.
That has been in the building since 1992 that is now fully shaped and fully formed. It is a monster behind a steel door that is just waiting to be released, and its name is Get Hillary.
Exactly.
And that's...
I know that there are people who love Hillary to death. I know there are people who love Obama to death. I'm very neutral on this.
I'm not in love with either one of them, I don't have venom dripping from my fangs for either one of them either. Going to vote for whomever my party nominates.
But they just showed a graph, and I normally don't look at Fox, but I just decided to look at it today because I just want to see some of the conservative commentary because I was wondering about these so-called Rush people who went over in Texas and voted for Hillary, supposedly. So I wanted to just find out what that story is about. But as I was watching it, they did a map of as things are today, and they did a statistical map of all the votes that have so far been taken based on an electoral map based on, you know, the election in November. And what the map showed, and this is what the Hillary people need to listen to this, because they can go back and again tonight was that, based on the map tonight, Obama would beat John McCain by 70 electoral votes. They did a comparison with Hillary Clinton. She loses to McCain by 80 electoral votes. That's not me being biased or anything else. It's what the map is saying. Based on the states that he's won, the number of votes that he's gotten, the number of votes McCain has gotten in certain elections based on X, Y, and Z.
It does seem to me fairly clear, and this is not a condemnation, and this is not an adulation for either candidate, although I agree with one theory more than I do with the other. It seems clear to me, based upon Senator Clinton's successes, that she is utilizing the same theory and strategy that John Kerry and Al Gore, and, in fact, her husband used, and that is to win the big states, win the Michigans, the Ohios, the Pennsylvanias, the New Yorks, the California, Oregon, Washington, you know, that sort of that blue state alliance that's enough to put you over the top. On the other hand, Obama has campaigned very hard in states that for a while now have been very thoroughly not sympathetic to Democratic candidates.
Exactly.
So that, you know, and it opens a political debate about, you know, does it matter that Obama won Georgia? Does it matter that Obama won Alabama? Does it matter that Obama will win Mississippi? And by the same token, does it matter that Senator Clinton won Tennessee, or that she's going to win Kentucky, or that she's going to win West Virginia? I mean, I'm sitting here in West Virginia, and I will tell you almost beyond any reasonable doubt, Gary, that she will be the winner of the primary in West Virginia.
No doubt.
And so does it matter? But does it matter if a candidate wins in states where it is more than likely that they will lose in the general?
And I would say this. Do you think that Obama would lose in New York?
No.
John McCain?
No.
Will he lose in California to McCain?
That one I'm not so sure about.
Okay. Will he lose Florida to McCain?
I think there is a distinct likelihood of that.
Will he lose Ohio to McCain?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
And Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. So it could go all around the boats, but we're not talking about states that possibly Obama could win also. Say Washington and other states that are out there. Kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. I think Obama could win Washington. I think he could win Oregon. I think it's clear that he wins in Minnesota. He wins in Iowa. He wins in Michigan. He wins in I don't know. Maybe not Michigan. Wisconsin. I think. I mean, that seems fairly obvious. Florida.
I think we have to look at this like this. This is the way I see it. You have to look at it like this. He's a new guy on the scene. People have to look at it this way. He's a new person on the scene. You can't expect him to have that much inroads into every, you know, sector, whereas the Clinton's been here for 20-some years. You have to look at growth. I'm looking at it like a business plan. You have to look at the possibility of growth.
Yeah, I see that. The thing that disturbs me, and I'm not trying to be
a... have the whole Democratic Party at that point behind him. That's why I said, would he win California with the entire weight of the Democratic Party behind him? I believe he would. I don't even think that to me really is a question.
See, I'm wondering if California or Pennsylvania are the next versions of Ohio and Florida as far as dummying up the voter is concerned. And I'm not saying this by way of putting people off or discouraging them. I just know that the Republicans, every year, they've got a state that they identify as the one where they're going to do their election fraud thing. And just from a demographic standpoint, Gary, this is the other thing, and I love the fact that we have a younger audience than almost any other politically oriented talk network out there going. And so I don't want to put anybody off in that way either. However, it is a demonstrable fact that the older demographic goes out and votes rain or shine, hell or high water. The same cannot be said of that younger demographic, and I hope that if they are the ones who push Obama over the top, that they then follow up in November and get their butts out to the polls, and that they don't get themselves disenfranchised by some nefarious vote-caging scam or some other means that the Republicans are they already have an established M.O. for doing.
Well, when you said that, that's what I was going to finish up with, is what that they would be the one who would win him the election. That's the point I was going to break out. What the Democrats would do at that point, because I know this is probably what Obama and them would say, that we have to make sure that the energy that we're getting from the young people translates into votes in November. That would be the number one priority. If I'm sure if he was to get this election within the next month or two, because I think it's pretty much a done deal. He will be the nominee. I think that's
you really do. I mean,
yeah, I think so.
I've been reading the delegate counts all day, and it seems anything but certain. At least for whoever's counting them that I'm reading them, that it's still up for grabs and will stay up for grabs, Gary. That's the thing that's got me scared.
They're not reading it right. Read Joe Alter's column, I believe it's from Newsweek. The thing is, what the people don't understand about the delegates in the system, it's about 87% is already done. You only have one more big state. Hillary Clinton would have to win by 70% the rest of the way to equal his delegate. He has 100 and almost 150 delegate lead. I mean, that's what people don't understand. Everybody's getting all hyped and bothered.
Well, the one thing I read today, Gary, said that neither one of them can garner the delegates for a lead pipe cinch nomination with the remaining states that are out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is that he will more than likely at the end have the most votes and more than likely the most pledged delegates. From what I understand, and I said I do know some people in the party, that the delegates have made the decision. They're going to go with the will of the voters. That is what has been said. Now, yes, that could possibly change, but that is the main feeling. And the main feeling is they feel the energy that they're getting from the youth, and not just the youth, but the independents, is what they need to take the party further into the future. They're not just thinking about winning this election. They're thinking about winning elections across the board. I mean, there's a lot of progressive candidates out there. There's a lot of other people who are being elected in the fall, and they want those numbers to come out. They don't feel that the Clintons can bring that number out. That's why that decision, I believe, is being made. There was a report that 50 delegates, if she lost Texas last night, were going to switch to Obama today to end it. But it's still teetering. So that's why I keep saying to people that this thing is not going to be over quickly, but it will more than likely still be Obama.
Let's run through a couple of potential future scenarios, Gary.
Yep.
Of the two, which works out better, do you think? If they could be convinced that they need to run together, which way works out better, her first or him first? Who has to be vice president?
Well, she will be her. She would have to be the vice president because he would have the delegate lead and the voter lead.
But wouldn't she be in the Dick Cheney position where she wouldn't be able to run as an incumbent in 12 or in 16?
I'm not sure how that works. I'm sorry.
I mean, she'd just be too old. She'd be too old. If we're talking about McCain being too old at 71, then she would be pretty pushing that pretty close. If she spent 8 years as vice president.
No, but the thing is this. With her situation, what I understand is that the people in the party would convince her that he would give her some major policy things like health care or whatever, a certain amount of control to do certain things. And granted, but they will make it clear to her that she will not be getting a nomination. It's saying if she wants that, then she'll have to accept that. That's what I understand how it probably would go.
Do you think they can bury the hatchet between them to come to some sort of entente?
I don't think so, but I think it doesn't matter between the two candidates. It's a matter of the voters who back them. It depends on how they feel. Will their candidates vote for who's
Well, I know that Mark Levine put that idea forward in the hour prior to my show beginning, and I could, you know how I am. Everything gets either a movie reference, a Star Trek reference, or a historical reference. I couldn't help thinking about the fact that the last time the Democrats put two people on a ticket that really didn't like each other, that didn't work out so well either, because that was Aaron Burr as Vice President Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, that was a very, very transformative moment for the young nation, so much so that we had to amend the Constitution to make sure that didn't happen anymore.
Well, Kennedy and LBJ didn't like each other either, but, you know.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well for Kennedy, did it?
Yeah, that's true. And I would hate to see Obama, I guess, at that position, because you have to be looking over your back every 2 minutes, I guess. But
are you inclined to believe that graphic depiction on the map that you saw on Fox?
I'm not. You know, first of all, it's Fox, but I saw something very similar on CNN when they talked about the electoral maps. But it's based on hypotheticals, because it's based on the fact of votes counted in certain states. And even if you go into red states, because so many Democrats, double the count in those red states, which you know is not probably going to be the case in a general election. You know, I mean, there was a couple of red states where Obama had more votes totals than John McCain and Huckabee. And that's just not going to be the case. Probably in the general election, I could be off, but
yeah, because there is a joker in the deck here, and that is these states where Republicans can cross over without so much as a buy your leave and vote as Democrats. That kind of thing drives me crazy. I think if you're a registered Republican, you should vote in the Republican primary, and if you're a registered Democrat, you should vote in the Democratic primary. Independents, meh. That's a separate issue. But, you know, you've got people like Rush Limbaugh encouraging people to go and vote for Hillary in Texas. And I don't know. Have you seen an analysis, Gary, of what kind of impact that had? I haven't.
Well, I mean, I haven't. I don't know if it's swung the Texas thing. I don't. But I think that, of course, some did. I mean, I know people in Dallas, and I thought some people. I also know that there was a lot of stuff going on with the Obama and the Latinos. They were like really going at it at some of the caucuses, I heard. So that's not really a good thing for the Democratic Party either, to have the Latinos and blacks fighting. So that's, Hillary, some of them, you know, Obama people going off on Hillary. And the Latinos, I would like to say, because I want to keep it more broad. From what my friends were saying, they were chanting that he's a Muslim. So,
that one's taken hold. That's why the said this Friday, I think. That's why the Republican Party put out their memo on Thursday saying we will never call him Barack Hussein Obama again, because the data came in to suggest that their campaign of Barack Obama is a crypto-Muslim had gotten legs and had rooted itself firmly, and that there are enough people out there that believe that now that no amount of facts are going to turn them from it.
Yeah, and see, the thing that people also don't know is just like I said before, both campaigns have been, you know, guilty of having a circus go out and do some things, probably not even known to the candidates, but it's a fact. I mean, from what I understand, the Clintons had to lay off a couple of people because they were circulating rumors about Barack being a Muslim. And then she did the 60 Minutes thing where she kind of said, well, as far as I know, you know, I mean, you can't really say those type of things and then, you know, expect the other candidate to sit back and go, okay, if that's how you're going to play the game, then we're going to play it too. So everybody's being dragged into the mud at this point. I just think like I said before, I just think at this point, everything I've seen, on CNN, Fox, and I've kind of been watching this stuff, every poll, just by every poll has shown, Obama would beat McCain head to head. Hillary is always, I think only one poll I've seen that Hillary would beat him head to head. Because McCain has a lot of negatives that have not come out as well. But the one thing McCain does have, they have both have experience supposedly, but his age is a little bit of a crutch to him. When you put Hillary against McCain, it's not much of a crutch anymore.
It's a 10-year, yeah, it's a 10-year difference.
It's only a 10-year difference. And so it's not like you can't paint the picture he's the old establishment anymore, because Hillary Clinton is the establishment. Obama's running on change. And as the economy keeps getting worse, and it's going to get worse before November, people are going to want to change the government. Your strongest hand is change. You want to change from Bush. That's your strongest hand. It's not experience. And that's what I, you know, if he, that's why I say he will be the nominee, because that's what internally the Democrats are saying. We have to change the fundamentals of the way politics is done in Washington. That is why Ted Kennedy and all these people in John Kerry and Old Guard are going for him.
Well, I do, you know, and this is strictly not scientific. It's based on a conversation with my sister. But it's this question that was put forward that he says, yes, we can. And you know, can what? And there are people out there who are asking that question. What does, you know, what does, you know, fine, change. What does it mean? Change to what? Change how? You know, yes, we can what? And I mean, it's lovely oratory, but the you know, I think there's some validity to those people who say that they're looking for a little bit of meat between the two pieces of bread at some point in time.
Well, I kind of respect when people say that, but then I kind of say it's a little bit of a hypocritical statement. The reason why I say that, a number of times I've talked to people, I said, you know, all you have to do is go on to both their websites, both Hillary Clinton, and download their positions and make a decision, you know, and think about what the change, because the fact of the matter is they're both really very close. I mean, there's some differences, obviously, with the Iraq war and some little small things, but they're really close. But what he's consistently said is we need to change the way politics are run in Washington. We need to stop being negative. We need to unite and work together as a group. Now, if that's not registering with people, the fact that he's saying that we, you know, this is just my personal opinion. If that's not registering with people, and if they're continuing to allow fear and these other things, keep saying that people are doing to try to scare us to not be non-thinking, then Bob, then what do you want? It's not really a deep question. People are looking for some deep answer. I think what they're basically saying, we just need to change the way we basically think about Washington. Basically, that's what we need to do as a people, as a government, and we all need to be involved. And I don't think it goes to some deep core policy issue level. It's the way that we operate on just a basic level to move forward. And right, what's stopping us is we keep like polarizing each other on just a very superficial level. So I don't know if it's really, to me, it's really that deep. That's what the whole thing of inspiration is. It's not really that deep. You just gotta be, you know, turn to be a little different and think about things a little differently. Just make that small little turn, you know? I mean, is that really that hard to understand?
Not for me. Here and again, I think you and I are talking in a rather academic sense, Gary. But you know what? In 2000, you know what George Bush ran on? Change.
He ran on compassion of conservatives.
He ran on change. He ran around the country saying, there are four divisions of the military, thanks to Bill Clinton, that if they were called upon would have to say, not ready for duty, sir. I intend to change that.
Yeah, but
and we're going to and compassionate conservatism was a change issue, because, you know, we're going to change the culture in Washington D.C. I'm old enough to remember when Jimmy Carter was running against Gerald Ford. He was going to change the culture in Washington D.C. I say this because beating up Washington D.C. is kind of easy, because it's with the exception of people who live there, it's the place in America that everybody more or less agrees is the problem.
But can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When George Bush was running around talking about change and all this other stuff, what you're saying he was going to do? When you look at his past life and his background, his life, was he like, did he work in the community as a grassroots organizer?
No, he did not. No.
Is he a constitutional law person who respects constitutional law? Because, you know, he is, Barack Obama did, you know, he was a constitutional lawyer. That's what he taught. Okay, so he respects the Constitution. You know, my point was that the problem was you can run or you can say you're anything. But my point, did we ever look at George Bush to say, let's see who this guy anybody like John Kennedy go back and say, well, you know, he's been going to this church for 20 years. You know, first he's a Muslim, but then he's going to some radical Christian church. So my question would be, let's look at Obama just like anybody else. Let's look at his life, and let's say, what did he do? I would say look at Clinton. I mean, I think the Clintons did some great things. I think they have a great track record. So that's why I'm saying I don't have any problems with the Clintons. I don't like the way they play politics, but on a personal level, you know, I mean, Bill has problems, but I'm going by Miss Hillary Clinton. I really don't have that much problem with her as a person. I think, you know, she's done.
I've got problems with her and the war. I've got problems with her and this vote on cluster munitions that apparently she voted to continue and Obama voted to eliminate.
Not personally, do you have some problems with her personal life?
No, her personal life is none of my business.
Yeah, but I'm saying that if we're going to look at her personal life, what I'm saying, her track record in the past, not just from the Senate, but even going back for it. I mean, because you can go into the Walmart. I mean, you can go on and on and on. I don't have that much of a problem with her in the sense that, no, I don't think she's ideal, nor is Obama ideal. My point being is that the bottom line is that if I was to compare her to George Bush, there's no comparison. So to say that George Bush...
Precisely.
And compare him to Obama, to me, is just totally crazy. There's no way I would compare him.
Look, I mean, it's that easy, Gary. Either one of them are head and shoulders above John McCain.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer for me in November. I just hope that the Clinton camp and the Obama camp won't one or the other or both won't destroy our chances for whoever the nominee is. And
my point being is, because I'm just trying to hear what you're saying, because I've heard this argument before, and I kind of every time I hear it, I get kind of mad about it, because it's like I understand that our American people, I know you're a very deep thinking guy, so I know that you're really kind of saying some stuff that you've been hearing. I understand that. And I know that we don't do a lot of deductive reasoning. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want to hear anybody talking about Bush ran on change and what Bush ran on, because nobody looked at Bush's life. He was a failure in everything that he did in life, from what I understand, what I saw.
Yeah, oh, he never touched anything that didn't turn to caca.
That's what I'm saying. That's my whole thing. And that's my thing. That's the only thing I would say about that. I will put more faith that Obama is serious about making change. Same as I would put more faith in Hillary that she's going to do the right thing as well. But I think at some point people have to stop saying what this change is and start to really look at yourselves, look at your communities, look at the young people who are being motivated by this. Whether it translates into votes or not, something is igniting in them. The Democrats have to see that that's the next generation of voters. You cannot mess around and lose that. You just can't do it.
You lose that, you lose them, is your argument.
Yes.
And you don't just lose them for this election cycle. You run the risk of losing them for good.
It's a simple business equation. The business executive who can fire up your base is great. But you have another business executive who's not only firing up your base, he's stealing from your competition. He's bringing people to your competition. He's also bringing in new customers. Which business executive should be promoted? Is that something?
Well, which business executive is going to have a business 10, 15 years from now?
There you go.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm trying to stay as neutral in this process as I possibly can, because neither one of these candidates fired me up. And during the so-called run-up, I was far more sympathetic to John Edwards, and you know I was originally unabashedly pro Kucinich.
Yeah. I mean, I like Edwards too, but I kind of realized now that he probably wouldn't have been the best candidate. And the reason why I say this, I think that he was running too much on a singular issue. I think Hillary kind of got caught into that whole healthcare thing, and she started drifting a little bit too much into it. And I said, oh, you're going into Edwards. A true leader and a true president has to be broader than just one issue.
You know what I think we're identifying here, Gary?
Yeah.
I think we're identifying the frustration of the real red meat, pay attention to politics type, we're identifying that person's objection to the dumbing down of the political process for the sake of electability and for the sake of the people who view it more as a reality television show. You and I want to hear specifics, and I know, yeah, go download the position papers and read the position papers, and I've done that. But you want to hear them say it, or at least I do. And because I want to hear them say it, I'm frustrated when they don't. I want clear statements about when the daggum war occupation's going to end. I want clear statements about the environment. I want to know what's acceptable and what's not.
So when you say you want a clear statement from a candidate, say from Hillary or Obama, what do you want to hear them? Did they want to say that on this date the Iraq occupation will end?
I can even live without that, but I want an end to the equivocating. I want, because everything has to be couched in terms of, well, you know, of course, I worship the troops. I have a little altar in my home where I pray to the troops every day because the troops are my God. And so I want to, you know, blah, 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 troops, 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 troops. And, you know, George Bush's war has been a disaster. This has been very poorly managed. And I hear things like that and it drives me nuts. Now, granted, none of these are quotes. But I want to hear that the war, the occupation will end. I want to hear that we are going to have serious engagement in terms of diplomacy in the world. I want to hear from an environmental standpoint. I want to hear both of these people or one of them. And frankly, this makes me a little bit of a single issue voter. The first one who says that clean coal technology is a fraud gets my vote. And the sad thing is, I fear that neither one of them will say that.
No, because I think neither one of them are probably in the scope of it, because they have just probably, obviously, going to this point, it's just like a fever pitch, and they're just, you know, they're just trying to win the election. That the breadth of the issues, the depthness of the issues, like you said, with the mountaintop removals and the problems and the air and everything that those things are causing, and just the pure slight of the environment is just ridiculous. It's not reaching those campaigns. And this is why I really believe that we need something. I'm not even preaching about Obama. But my point being is this. The one thing I'm convinced of, we need a bottom-up movement. That's what I like about his candidacy. At least it's coming from a grassroots point.
Well, I prefer his campaign strategy insofar as it has not written off a significant chunk of the country. You know, he had a campaign staff going in Alabama and Georgia and so forth, and he did not just pretend that Alabama and Georgia didn't exist.
But see, the question is, once, let's say, Obama or whoever was getting office, who is going to be the candidate that is going to be most beholden to the American people or the lobbyists? And I would assume, it's just basic politics. The people that put you in are the people that you listen to. It's just that simple. You know, that's always my thing. And McCain's going to listen to the people that puts him in. And we know who puts him in there, because that's the people who get him elected. So if we have a candidate that most of the people have put him in, then a constituency from West Virginia or whatever who says, look, we don't like what's going on.
And that's the point. None of the issues that you and I have discussed so far, Gary, we don't have a prayer with McCain in office. But I genuinely believe with either Obama or Clinton, that we have at least a seat at the table.
See, I kind of disagree with that, because I will go even further. I think the only way that you're really going to get fundamental change, because it's not so much what Obama is talking about. I think that, get past what he's talking about. His candidacy. Last night I was at a function with Donna Edwards. I don't know if you know who she is, but she beat the congressman here, Albert Wynn, in my district out. She's a young progressive.
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, sure, yes.
Yeah, I was out with her. I was with them last night at a function. They had a little function at a little small restaurant, and she was there, and she said, look, you know, the Obama campaign and this new energy helped fuel her, because there's a lot of new people on the left. The progressive movement helped push her in. This is the end game to me. But people are not seeing this aspect of it. It gives young people who want to get into Washington, who are more idealistic and want to make real changes, a shot now. So it goes in the abstract way beyond just him talking about change. People say, wow, if he can make it to the presidency, I can run for Congress. I can kick out these Joe Lieberman types, these people who are just sitting there, Charlie Rangel and all these other people. There's people I know now who want Charlie Rangel gone in Harlem. And they're looking at bringing up some progressive candidates against him. So that's my whole point about this thing. We have to get new people in Washington.
No, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other reason why I said, you know, when I looked at this whole thing, I said, that is why I kind of started leaning more toward Obama, because not so much, he may not be saying the exact things I want to hear, but I think he is showing people, hey, we can move into Washington and push away that old guard. And I think that's what we really need, because I'm telling you right now, again, I'm not bashing Hillary Clinton, but here is the situation that you have. Hillary Clinton, I believe, is okay as a person, and as a thing, but I don't like the fact that the men who serve her in this campaign and her husband have done well by her. And I actually attribute a lot of the dirty tricks based on the stuff that they're doing, not necessarily her. Even though she's a part of the campaign, she's just trying to survive. But I think people are not looking at the fact that she represents the old guard of the Democratic Party. And even if she gets in office, just as I hear you complain about Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and all these people, they're going to just continue with the same old crap, Bob. You have to remove...
And that is a concern of mine. I mean, I don't look back at the Clinton presidency as a nightmare. I mean, it was the broadest peacetime expansion of the American economy in American history. It was for the if you sort of discount the no-fly zones and the Somalia and Kosovo thing, which sort of they all sort of pale by comparison to this nightmare occupation and that's 5 years old this month. It was largely 8 years of peace and prosperity, and so I don't look down my nose at that. On the other hand, I still look back and I remember the fact that, you know, Bill Clinton said, it's time for us to move on and, you know, shut down the Iran-Contra investigation, and gave old man Bush a pass when the man should probably be in Leavenworth by now. So I share some of that, and I understand it completely.
Well, I think you need to also, I think people also need to look at the way she's ran her campaign, because I do think, even though people say, oh, it's just campaign, no, I think it's reflecting how she's going to lead the country. She's probably going to put the same old kind of model from the 90s back in, and that's why really why she's getting beat so bad, because Obama and these people have adopted a new base model.
But one of the models from the 90s, Gary, was pay-as-you-go. And that seemed to work fairly well for us.
Yeah, well.
Because, you know, we remember Bill Clinton walked into office and got handed a deficit similar to what whoever walks into the Oval Office in January 2009 will be handed. And that thing was gone, and we had a surplus by 2000, and it only took George Bush 4 months to run through the daggum surplus.
Yep.
So all, you know, I mean, some of the policies worked, yeah. You know, but then again, I don't make the mistake of thinking that Hillary Clinton is Bill Clinton. Frankly, that's part of her problem, that she isn't. Because.
Yeah, but I think some things have changed. I think what I'm saying is that, you know. Now, people keep making comparison to 92, and I tell people all the time, the person who just, you know, I work in a lot of technology kind of stuff and all this stuff. Stuff has changed. The socialization, the way people network now through the internet and all this other stuff, socialization and stuff like that. The world has changed. The world's globalized now. The entire world has changed. And it's not 1992 again, and you can't put people back in from 1992 and think that they're going to have the same success. That's not the thing. You have to look at the people and say, who has the best model at this moment in time? And say, now I'm not saying that Hillary couldn't put that together, but from what I've seen is that the American government, where it is right now, from a bureaucracy statistical level, cannot compete with the problems that is facing this country. They are still working from a centralized kind of top-down strategy, when everything now, Bob, is just not linear up. Everything is linear sideways. Everything is flat. And everything's now is headed toward grassroots localization.
And it looks a lot more like a spider web than an XY axis. I get that. I really, really do.
And I don't think the Clinton people think that way anymore. I think they're going to do that. To me, I'm just saying, this is what I'm scared of. I'm scared that, because let's say if she does get the nomination, and I'm hoping if she gets it, you know, if she's nominated, she does get it. But I'm concerned is that if she gets in and she can't handle situation, because she doesn't understand you need to change Washington. You need to change the way the country looks at things. That's why I really like Al Gore, because people say what they want about Al Gore. Al Gore made a comment why he invented the Internet. It wasn't that. It was just that he was very foresightful in the way things were going. I mean, that's why he's a he jumped on Google before it came out. He helped put a lot of those meetings, and I used to go to some of those things in New York. He was always at those things. He was putting those things together to spawn a lot of that economy that we saw in 1992 with all this innovation, you know. And people don't realize that Microsoft at the time was being investigated, so they weren't being able to buy up all these companies and slow down the Internet. So there's a lot to, like, kind of look at the 90s and decipher and say, hey, this could work this way and work that way. But I think in the end, we have to look at what's best for the country now. And I just don't think looking back to 1992 is, and hoping that we can restore something that has passed just the way. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Well, I understand that. I understand that completely. And at the end of the day, my focus has turned. And my focus henceforward, because he is the nominee now, my focus henceforward is beating John McCain. And as such, my focus is going to be attacking John McCain. I hope that maybe a cue can be taken by, if not the candidates themselves, then by the people who support him. Turn away from attacking the other Democratic candidate and turn toward McCain, because, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Who can beat John McCain? And whoever comes out and takes the fight to John McCain and takes it most strongly and most sternly and most convincingly, I think will be the person who comes out of Denver with the nomination.
Yeah, well, I think that I hear you, but I do think we have to be kind of not so. We got to be careful though, Bob, because I think I hear that a lot from people. But we also got to not take in the breath of the fact that how people are really hurting. And looking at some tactical ways to beat John McCain.
But no, I'm not talking about tactics. You mentioned people are really hurting. Yes, they are. People are aching in America, and it's only going to get worse. And America can throw in the daggum towel if John McCain is the president. That's what I mean. He is what Mark Levine called him. He is John McSame. He's George Bush. He's George Bush without the ability to raise his arms. Okay, Gary, he's a nightmare waiting to happen to America, and I'm looking for both of these candidates to come out and train their broadsides on him. And I really, really think that that whoever does it best is the person who is best suited to beat him, and therefore best suited to end the pain and take America forward. Because we can't talk about progressive, we can't talk about liberal, we can't talk about anything unless we beat this man.
Yeah, and again, I would be 100% for either candidate, which one I felt was the best one to beat McCain. But I will say again, I still think that we have to still have a broader perspective of the fact that American people may be in a situation where this time, I could be wrong, they may not necessarily be voting because of their fears. They may for once vote on the issues, just for once. And my point being that we need to make sure whoever the candidate is, that they have that vision that the American people are looking for. Because if we allow the Republicans to say, well, you know, you can't say this candidate is no better than McCain, because look, they did the same thing that McCain did, you got a problem, Bob.
Sure.
You know, people need to go back and look at, you know, you can say what you want to about Reagan. You have to, some great leaders, you have to put a vision forward at some point. That's what you have to kind of do.
And Ronald Reagan's vision was fear.
Well, I'm saying, but even if it's a vision, though, my point being that the American people are now going to be probably around November in a very manipulative type of position. And I think if you have a good forward-looking, positive, change-oriented, maybe, backed up with some facts and things of how you're going to do things that are realistic and can be deciphered by the American public, that's the candidate that can beat McCain. But if you come on where I'm better than McCain, and you can't really say that I'm that much different than him, you got to be more different than him just in policy, because American people are just not going to look at policy. You got to be able to inspire them a little bit. And I think think there's some things, I think I hear other people talking about this. I see something totally different. I really feel that the Democratic Party has to throw out a long-term vision that people buy into. And I don't think you have to have so-called these specifics. I want to see the beat. I think you have to have people say, we'll step out on faith on this. Because that's what America has was built on. I mean, besides slaughtering the Indians, people took a leap of faith. The Civil Rights Movement, leap of faith. You know, after the Great Depression, you know, the New Deal, leap of faith. People doing things at certain times, making sacrifices for the country on a leap of faith, not on a leap of fear. And that's why I have a problem with candidates who are peddling fear, because I think fear only leads to one thing, worst of America. George Bush is a great example.
Well, fear leads to John McCain. That's my point. Hey, Gary, thanks a million, brother.
All right, man.
All right.
You don't have to focus on old John McCain too much, man. You know, we'll be all right.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, John.
Bye now. Our good friend Gary over in Maryland, and I hope you stuck with us. You quit. Dadgummit. Well, still. 22 minutes past the hour. The phone number 877-443-2366, or on your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-5453. And, well, look, here's one for you. You want to see the difference in McCain? Last week you may have seen the story about Boeing losing the contract for the new generation of Air Force, and well, not just Air Force, I guess, military tanker aircraft. There were American jobs at stake there. Some of them, good union jobs at Boeing. And it turns out that John McCain came out, and it was the Air Force, not just generally the military. John McCain came out and defended the Air Force decision to blow past American workers. And look, yeah, let me tell you, I feel a little funny. I'm not going to get all misty-eyed about a defense job. But this is an America that has a hard time making things as it is anymore because our manufacturing base is gone. And Boeing does, in fact, make stuff other than military aircraft. But John McCain said it was cool by him that the Air Force decided to outsource its military tanker contract through Northrop Grumman to a French outfit. This is not France slamming. I don't do that. It's a $35 billion contract for airborne refueling planes. He said he would have no part of overturning the decision to give the contract to the company that would use the foreign labor. He said, military decisions should not be about creating jobs. Wow. That one's a little bit... Actually, that runs directly contrary to the entire raison d'etre of the military-industrial complex. The perpetual national security state was created in the wake of World War II in order to maintain employment. In order to make it possible for the military, for the World War II employment levels to exist for the soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines coming home, it was in fact to A, throw a sop to the military defense industry, and B, thereby create jobs. And McCain, in the meantime, looking backwards, 2003, he authored an amendment that undermined rules that require the U.S. military to purchase equipment, defense systems, and components that are manufactured in the United States. They were called Buy American rules. He put the knife in that. And it was that amendment in 2003 that allowed the Air Force to make this decision that puts a knife in Boeing. Boeing is headquartered in Kansas. How about that? You think that's going to play well with Red State Kansas? Is John McCain going to tell them, is he going to get away with or be able to tell Kansas, the reddest of red states, that it's okay by him because, you know, he's an evangelical fundy now and Jesus wanted that French firm to get the contract via Northrop Grumman? The McCain Amendment cost about 44,000 jobs nationwide. And it sent hundreds of millions of dollars outside the American economy. That 2003 vote, only one Democratic senator voted for the McCain Amendment. How about that? Not even Joe Lieberman, who was a Democrat at the time, voted for the amendment. Hillary Clinton voted against that amendment. Only Zell Miller voted for that amendment. And we know a little bit about Zell Miller, don't we? This is a real meat and potatoes issue. Barack Obama wasn't in the Senate at the time, so one may presume that he would have voted against the amendment. But John McCain sunk a knife in American workers' backs and says he's going to continue to twist it now. That's some hero, that John McCain. And I am going forward. It is, as far as I'm concerned, it is a war now, and it is a war on John McCain. Because you know what? He doesn't have to worry anymore, and guess what? He's going to make war on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama equally until one of them emerges as the nominee. And if we spend our time arguing the merits of Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, we guarantee a McCain presidency. What's left? Mississippi's left. Kentucky's left. Pennsylvania's left. West Virginia's left. Oregon remains. Not sure who else. But the only biggie that remains is Pennsylvania. If you're in Pennsylvania, you've got some soul searching to do. If you're in West Virginia, same thing. Kentucky, yep. Mississippi, yep. But know one thing, please. The enemy of Barack Obama is not Hillary Clinton. The enemy of Hillary Clinton is not Barack Obama. The enemy of both, and the enemy of hope and the enemy of change and the enemy of a future is John McCain. Can we please get clear about that one little fact? Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
You got Michelle out in California.
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I'm okay, but I'm calling because I got to dispute what you're saying about the tanker deal. Not that I'm for McCain.
Well, I mean, these are facts.
I need to get you information about the tanker deal and Boeing and the job, you know, lossage. Because I got the information.
Okay, well, I'm looking at information that was provided by the Kansas Democratic Party. I guess they could be wrong.
Well, you know, that other half of me just consider employment as a Boeing rival. So, anyway.
Some of the stuff is going to be farmed out to a French firm to build the planes. They're going to be built on French Airbus frames.
And it's coming over to guess where? Alabama.
Yeah.
And then down in Florida. So, but the Boeing plane, mind you, wasn't ready, okay, would have cost us way a lot more, you know, if we're going to spend money. And many of its parts were not made here either.
Nothing is purely anything anymore, but the whole airplane is going to, I mean, the airplane itself is coming from France. Well, it's coming from Airbus, and that's France and Great Britain and Germany and yada yada.
Not the whole, the fuselage, part of the fuselage is coming, but the wings not. The wings aren't.
We're going to make the wings?
Yeah. And I'll get you more info on it.
Okay.
But, it's not a bad deal, in fact, for the working.
Well, it's a bad deal for the Boeing workers who lose their jobs.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, it's not the workers that I'm against, but I'm sure against Boeing. I don't know if you know this, but 2 years ago, they're sloppy. I mean, we give them lots of money, and they don't do what they're supposed to do. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to talk military contracting, Boeing's a sloppy business. And they know it. They've been arrogant about it. So they're taking their workers' future and throwing it. They could care less about their workers' future.
But
they cared about was their relationship with.
What I'm more concerned about, though, here, Michelle, is John McCain's willingness to sink the knife in the backs of American workers, because it's not just Boeing. It's 44,000 jobs that weren't Boeing. That went outside the territorial confines of the United States by virtue of his little amendment in 2003.
I don't even think John McCain really knows much, honestly. I've listened to him, like when he was dealing with telecommunications and the communications industries. He was on the advisory board, you know, a member, what was it, a couple of years ago, and he was kind of chastising, you know, the cable companies and the TV stations, you know. When I heard him, you know, doing what he did, it was all talking notes, something you could hear, like, on the news. But he didn't take the law, he didn't take the legislation, the historic legislation, and show how it applied to the wrongdoings of the companies. So, I mean, he just plays on the propaganda. And I guess what I'm trying to say, Bob, is if you really want to keep people. I mean, somebody's going to tell. I'm a friend. I'm not an enemy. So you tell people, oh, he's outsourcing jobs. Well, whereas a Republican would say, well, no, they're not. In fact, Boeing outsourced more of this job than what's going to end up with Northrop Grumman getting that contract and what Airbus's part is on the contract. So, I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're dealing with specifically the Boeing issue, whereas I'm using it as an example of the overarching effect of his 2003 amendment. To keep the American military industrial complex running on American work.
Right.
And like I said, those other 44,000 jobs aren't Boeing jobs. Those are jobs building various and sundry things used by the military. I mean, if you think back, and I know this may seem a little bit petty and small. I mean, it's only bullets, but we outsourced bullets. Bullets, Michelle, to Israel.
Yep. Oh, no, you're right. The outsourcing of what used to be fundamentally, you know, American was our military. And the outsourcing there, but that started...
I mean, how am I supposed to feel? Because I have conflicts as it is, Michelle. How am I supposed to feel when I find out that the military's uniforms are made in a sweatshop in China? Now, I'm not claiming that to be fact, but you know, would you be surprised? Would it surprise you even a little bit to find that out?
Exactly, no. It doesn't surprise me. A lot of the things don't surprise me about it, but what I think might surprise you is that it happened a lot sooner than this administration.
But, you know, you talk about what, you know, you don't think McCain knows a lot. Sometimes I think that I should maybe guard my words a little bit more closely, because I said something a while back to the extent that, you know, we had Richard Nixon and we, you know, ran him out of office and thought, whew, man, that was awful. Nobody will ever be that awful again. Boom, Reagan. So Reagan gets out of office, and we go, man, what a miserable old moron he was. Nobody could be worse than Reagan. Boom, Bush.
I heard that show, by the way.
What?
I heard that show.
Oh, okay.
Did you talk about it?
And now we've had 8 years of an absolutely undeniable moron in office, and we're sitting here thinking, you know,
What could be worse?
Well, yeah, I got worse for you. His name's John McCain.
Exactly.
He's Bush was relatively young and stupid. This guy is old and stupid. And you know what's and you know, I hope to be an old guy someday. So what's that? But I can't help referring to that old saying. There's no fool like an old fool. You remember that?
I know. Yep.
I desperately want to get Democrats and liberals and progressives and other decent people to understand that this guy is the problem now. If you're still in a position where you've got a primary to vote in, make your choice, feel good about your primary choice, but dedicate yourself to the idea that come November you are by God going to support the Democratic nominee. Because anything else gets you, John McCain. And he's a moron.
Yeah, and you know, the sad thing is, and what I've been reading, this is really sad, that you know how the evangelicals have said, oh, no, we would never support McCain. Just go on YouTube and go to The Real News.
Yeah.
You know, I sent you a couple of videos.
Yeah.
They sent out one. This guy's doing an interview in Texas at a church on Sunday. Oh, my God. these people, oh, well, yeah, okay, he's not the evangelical's pick. No, I would have picked Romney, or I would have picked Huckabee, but okay, so we pretty much know it's going to be McCain. The one thing he does have is that he's for the people, and for the troops.
Yeah, I think somebody needs to ask John McCain a question right now, but of course nobody will. Senator McCain, you say that you want to continue the occupation that George Bush started. Senator McCain, will you go to even one soldier's funeral? Because the guy you want to replace hasn't. Will you go to at least one soldier's funeral? Senator McCain, will you allow soldiers' coffins to be seen coming home, or does it have to continue to be some deep, dark secret? And by the way, this is an appropriate time, Michelle, to mention, you know, I come up with all these ideas and they never go anywhere, but you know, I think we need a bumper sticker.
I was going to ask you, are you going to write that into an editorial? I mean, you had one editorial that was printed recently.
Yeah, I might, yeah. But no, I want to do a bumper sticker. And the bumper sticker says, raise your hands if you're against torture.
Oh, you're mean. Is it absolute? Would it work?
You know, and waist high doesn't count, Mr. Senator McCain.
That's a shit. Oh, damn it. I can't be serious with you, sir.
Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I'm deadly in earnest. I think that would be a great bumper sticker. Black field, white letters. Raise your hands if you're against torture.
Oh, shoot. That's a good one.
Because, you know, that's the other thing that we've got to just break over his head. This man can't raise his arms because he was tortured, and yet he can't be bothered to come out and be against us committing torture, and therefore making sure that when one of our soldiers gets caught, it's far more likely that that soldier spends a lifetime unable to raise his hands too.
Well, right there, Bob, this is what I would tell people too. You know, when Bush was pushing this whole thing about the torture, and the Senate was up there, and he went and talked to Bush, and all of a sudden, oh, he's changed his mind because, well, they gave into, you know, what we agreed upon. We came to an agreeable conclusion. Right there, I would tell people, and you think this man would be able to secure the American people when he goes in to meet with a man like Bush and is swayed, when he can humble himself to a man that said that he had a child out of wedlock, you know, and say things about his wife and still be able to say that he respects that person, and you're telling me this person will keep you safe?
Yeah, not hardly.
Oh,
let's look at the list, Michelle, real quick, because the Bush administration this week is pushing for, it's trying to push the Congress into bowing down and kowtowing again on torture.
Right.
Over this issue of the Army Field Manual. The legislation says that the CIA would be bound by the strictures of the Army Field Manual on interrogations. Okay? And the Bush administration says, oh, no, that's too restrictive. Well, this is the list of stuff that the Bush administration wants to be able to do to other people. This is the stuff that John McCain de facto agrees with. One, forcing a prisoner to be naked, perform sexual acts, or pose in a sexual manner. Two, placing hoods or sacks over the head of a prisoner and using duct tape over the eyes. Three, applying beatings, electric shocks, burns, or other forms of physical pain. 4, waterboarding. 5, using military working dogs. 6, inducing hypothermia or heat injury. 7, conducting mock execution. Or 8, depriving a prisoner of necessary food, water, or medical care. John McCain is now in favor of every one of those things, Michelle. Why shouldn't we just beat him over the head with it?
Oh.
Because those are the things that are banned in the Army Field Manual.
And those are the things that we use.
And those are the things that have already been largely been proven to be used by
soldiers.
Well, I mean, there was a guy getting the stuffing beaten out of him at Abu Ghraib in the new photos that were released last week. There was a guy standing on a box with a hood over his head. The guy who was standing on the box with the hood over his head also had wires attached to him. And you know what? I got to thinking about it, Michelle. You know, they came out and said, well, you know, they weren't really attached to anything. He only thought he was going to be shocked. I'm supposed to believe that?
Yeah.
I know damn good and well there was a diehard in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Using military working dogs? Oh, there's pictures of that, too. Waterboarding? They've admitted it. Hypothermia or heat injury? Yeah, that's on the list, too. How about a guy hanging naked from his bunk upside down for hours on end?
Got pictures of it.
How about a guy standing cruciform in the middle of a hallway with liquid feces poured all over him? We got pictures of it.
Yep.
And John McCain cannot be brought to say that that ought not happen, that we ought to have laws to make sure that doesn't happen. They want to say, well, you know, I was just a bad apple. And they can't pass a law saying that says the bad apple should be punished for it.
Well, and what really, I mean, if anybody, any representative should be held to task on this one, that you would think would be totally against it, would be Flipper, McCain. I'm sorry, but, you know, I mean, it's obvious.
Raise your hands if you're against torture.
Every day. I call him Flipper.
Yeah, right, yeah. I call him the McCain-Churian candidate because I watched the movie and he just is.
Oh,
although Mark Levine's John McSame is...
it's pretty good.
I'm liking that a lot.
I have to give Mark credit on that. Mark and I don't agree a lot of the times, but that one's pretty good. That he understands that... Well, I think Mark also understands, as well as you understand, this guy really is just... Remember in 2000 when Bush was, I mean, you and I and many other people looked at Bush and thought, oh, this is just funny that the Republicans are putting this guy forward. I mean, come on. This isn't their candidate. No, give me a break. The guy's just an idiot. I can't believe that they're putting pasty-ass, crazy McCain, as Mark would call him, forward. I just,
but they are.
How weak.
But it's not weak. It is not weak. No Republican presidential candidate is ever as weak as you might think, because there is a machine, and it is a vicious machine, and it is a well-funded machine, and it will slime, and it will filth, and it's like some sort of old, poorly tuned engine that just belches out vile poison, and it will be used in behalf of anybody who runs as the Republican nominee. It is the machine that will crank out jungle drums for Barack Obama, and it's the machine that will be used to crank out castrating bitch accusations on Hillary Clinton.
I heard one today when I was watching that video, that propagandist core puke. It was core values. When I heard this woman say he has core values, all I could think of is he's got this black mass stuck up inside his intestines, and he's such a constipated individual, and he's walking around with this bile. And I mean, when people talk about evangelicals and their core values, all I think of is this toxic waste that they need to have, you know.
Yeah, they, yeah. But that goes back to my bumper sticker campaign. That apply, you know, that applies to evangelicals too. You know, they like to go to their little fundy evangelical meetings and stand there waving in their arms in the air, swaying to the contemporary Christian music, all for Jesus. Well, you know what? If they can do that for Jesus, they can put their hands in the air to oppose torture too. Let John McCain be the only person who can't put his hands in the air. Not just because he can't, but because he won't. Because please bear in mind, Michelle, even if he could raise his arms, he wouldn't. He would not. Because John McCain approves of torture. And that's the kind of sickness and the pathology that I think we get out of his 5 years in the Hanaway Hilton. He wants other people to be tortured like he was, so that, you know, because misery loves company.
I think he's in denial of where he came from. I mean, have you heard him talk on this recently? I haven't heard him talk on his involvement in Vietnam. He doesn't bring it up.
For good reason. He doesn't want to, because eventually somebody might, I don't know, we're Democrats, it's hard to say, Michelle, but somebody might actually read his daggum autobiography, you know, that he wrote himself, it's his words, whether he remembers them or not, where he admits to having, under the influence of torture, denounced America.
Right.
He did it, not me, not you, he. And he doesn't want people...
You're probably right. You know, he likes the idea of torturing another enemy, yep, because he was tortured.
Right.
Make them piss in their pants.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Break their shoulders. Let their minds crack like a rotten egg.
Man, you know, I agree. Like I said, I just wanted to bring you that issue, but I agree that and that's what I keep thinking of, you know, how are we going to get besides McCain in office? How can we do this?
Well, we've
how
got...
How can we...
Okay, I'm going to be really mean here. The people who have already voted in their primaries and exercised their rights... Where Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are concerned, should shut up now. Because they had their say. Leave our say to the rest of us and let us make our choices. Because...
Well, I can't say anything then.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not being... All I'm saying is, let America make its choice. And the candidate should do the same. Talk about, you know, I want to see how, you know what, this is the swimsuit portion of the pageant. I want to see how you look in a swimsuit, and I don't mean you, I want to see how Obama and Hillary look in a swimsuit compared to McCain in a swimsuit. All right?
Exactly.
I want to see somebody who can beat John McCain.
Yeah, you need the candidates, those candidates, to exhibit and talk about.
I don't want to hear another damn word, Michelle, about Hillary voting for the war. I don't want to hear another damn word about the speech that Obama gave against the war. I don't want to hear another word about any of that crap. I want to hear how they plan to beat John McCain. Because McCain is the target now. I disagree with Hillary Clinton's vote over the war. I couldn't disagree more profoundly. I get a sick feeling in my stomach when I think about how she voted to continue the use of cluster munitions that little children can walk across. Oh, and you know, and the cluster bombs just happen to be the same color as the food packets that we dropped in Afghanistan. So it's a real Lady or the Tiger kind of moment. Do I get dinner today, says little Ahmed, or do I get dead? And that's apparently okay with Senator Clinton. But that's all right, because apparently blowing up mountains in West Virginia is okay with Senator Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's still talking that clean coal nonsense. And I can't help but remember the fact that during the Bill Clinton administrations, we weren't putting up with nearly the misery in this state from mountaintop removal that we are now.
No, because you had reclamation that was...
No. They just weren't doing it.
Okay.
I mean, the technique existed and it was happening on a small scale, but it only got ramped up after Al Gore got screwed out of the White House. And so all of those issues are out there, and people are, and I think everybody knows them. I think everybody knows what those issues are, and the people who still have yet to vote should make their decisions based upon those issues.
Right.
But they should also make their decisions based upon beating John McCain. Because we are down, you know, we're down to finalist 1, 2, and 3 now. And you know what? The runner-up does not get to fill in for the winner in case the winner is unable to fulfill her duties.
I will tell you that I believe the reason why you're not going to hear a lot of smack from either candidate on McCain, because I think the Democratic Party already sees a lot of independents going for McCain.
I don't want to hear smack. I just want to hear him exposed. I mean, I don't want anybody to say anything about him that's untrue. I don't want anybody to ask him when he quit beating his wife. I want people to ask him why he won't stand up against torture. I want that taken to him, because you know what? Both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton have viable positions on torture. They have positions that I can support on torture. So I want it asked of him why he won't come out against torture. You know, like I said, I think there should be a Senate vote once a week on various and sundry different kinds or techniques of torture, and I want John McCain to have to vote either yay or nay on them. This isn't, Michelle, some sort of football game for me, dear. I don't want to win to be winning so I can do my end zone dance. I want to win this election because my children and my grandchildren's and undreamt of great-grandchildren's future damned well depends on it.
Boy, I hope I can get that back for me. I had that, and like I've talked to you,
I know.
I'm feeling, you know, disenfranchised. So, I don't know.
Well, look, I'm 45 years old and I don't fall in love with political candidates anymore. I don't do it.
I don't fall in love with them, but I just don't. I just got to wonder their motivation, Bob.
I know it, but Michelle, I know what their motivation is. They're politicians. Their motivations are power. Their motivations are ego-driven. Some of it's monetary. I understand the motives. And I understand that there's probably a little bit of sociopathy that goes with being a politician.
Right.
But that still does not change the fact that I recognize first and foremost, above all other things, that John McCain must be stopped. It's not one of those situations where you go, well, I'll be okay with either Hillary or McCain, or I'll be okay with Obama or McCain. Because I won't be, because it's my kids and grandkids' future that is at stake if that ignorant monster gets into office. Sorry, I'm getting kind of strident. And I got to get out of here, too. See what you do to me? You make me lose all scope of time.
All right, kiddo.
All right. See you, Michelle.
I'll talk to you.
All right. Bye. Our pal, the gal from Cal, Michelle. Got to get out of here. Rerun of Strictly Confidential on the way. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing? First of all, for all those, you know, I've never had anything personal against Hillary. I think.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 119 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. We're also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. You should stop by and check it out. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Wednesday, February the 28th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Wednesday evening, which is February the 28th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're more than welcome to call in and participate, speak with myself and to the two remarkable guests who I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And there you're going to find links to all of the guests. You'll find links to the guests' website, as well as the audio archives that the previous shows, the guest appearances, if you may have missed one. You'll be listening, or rather also seeing links there for the chat room, which is active as I speak. And as I like to remind you, if you are not involved with the chat room while listening to the Head On Radio Network, you're indeed missing a very powerful aspect of the network. We, of course, welcome you if you're listening at another time via the podcast. We're glad to have you aboard also. You'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site over at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find links to the main network. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and you'll find links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page. You'll find links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. That translates into 877-443-2383.